Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Cheers.
Hi, Bayo. Feels good, though. I think that podcasting should be an evening activity anyways.
You think?
Yeah, when you have, like, it's freer to talk when you had, like, a day's worth of activities that you can, like, reflect on or, like, pull off of.
But I'm a morning guy.
Are you?
I'm a morning guy, yeah. I think I'm sharper in the morning. Not that I'm dull right now, but I think naturally I'm just much more, like, I try to schedule all my podcasts in the morning, you know? Mm. And in the evening, I'm, like, winding down. I'm normally in bed by 9.
You're more trained to do that, though.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
To get your brain going. I'm a slow morning guy. I'm, like, look at some useless websites.
Just, so you're on right now.
I'm way more on, yeah.
Oh, shit.
I'm more trained to, like, or at least I'm just more used to. I mean, stand-up is always done in the
evening. Yeah, in the evening. Like, man, speaking of stand-up, man, I just really, really think about that a lot. You know, I know that, like, that's one skill that, it's not even just a skill. I think it's just one experience I've always wanted to do, I've always wanted to have. It's like being a bartender for me, too.
Mm.
Always wanted to do that, too.
Just two nighttime dirtbag activities. Well, you actually, because we talked about this in one of our failed podcasts, but I had been thinking about this for a while, about how you have said that you're terrified of bombing, right? Or just that possibility of, like, falling flat on your ass in front of people that you don't even know.
Falling flat in front of people I don't know. Bombing is, for me, just forgetting things. It's not the ability, the innate ability to remember your lines and then delivering it and then bombing. I don't fear that one bit.
Oh.
At all. That does not scare me. What scares me is getting on stage and blanking out and not being able to... It's like forgetting lyrics to singing. That's sort of a story of my life.
Did that happen?
Yeah. For like 5 or 6 years, I was trying to be a singer and I couldn't land on the notes, couldn't land on the melody, couldn't remember the lyrics.
Oh, that was a consistent problem for you.
Yeah. So that's, for me, bombing would be going on stage and not being able to recall.
And drawing a blank.
Yeah. I could do this dance all day long. I could just, like, meet new people, be on my toes, just be very, like, improv, I think I'm okay. Mm-hmm. But when I'm, like, I know that lyrically for songs and songwriting and the way you want to deliver specific things to feel a certain way, I just can't dig back into my memory to pull things out like an actor.
But aren't you trained to, like, I don't know, improv? I guess singing is very different, but, like, as a stand-up, like, that has happened to me quite a few times where I just, like, forget my shit and I just, like, go off and, you know, I know that it's gonna be bad, but at least, like, I have to do my time. Like, I have to stay up on stage. Like, there's no way that if they paid to see me do 10 minutes or they paid to see me do 15 minutes that I'm gonna stop at 6. Like, that's a cardinal sin.
But don't you feel like you've faced the demon of your failure? If you look at all the greats, like whether it's singing or acting or comedians, right? The greats have this ability to remember their shit. And then they can improvise based on the lyrics or based on the dialogue that they have to deliver. But as if you have a firm command of what you got to deliver, then you're fine. But people like average mere mortals like you and I, if we're going up there and we don't have a firm grip or grasp of the language or of the melody or the lyrics, then we are not equipped to throw a 98 mile an hour baseball.
Yeah, right? But then that's just reps though, right? Like that's why you do multiple sets a night. At open mics, that's why you just get so used to. That's why when you're driving in your car, you'll just mumble your routine to yourself just to make sure that you remember what word comes after what. I mean, everybody's different, but that's how I'll do it when I'm working on a new set.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure something out, and I don't feel like leaving the house to go do an open mic. I'll be like, well, I have to work on this somehow, and then, you know, I'll just work on it by myself at home to just make sure that I have the memorization right. But then if I'm only doing that, then how do I know if it's even fucking funny?
Yeah. I can only imagine, like, shit hot doctors, right? Top of your class. The ability to read a page and just go in and fucking have, like, the full command of the literature that you just soaked in last night. It's the difference between, like, somebody who's super bright and talented, top of your class, medical school. You know, I have uncles that were like that. I heard stories of that growing up. They would just, like, goof off. I actually know guys who I've heard other people talk about them like they never studied, but they were always the top of the class. And that's, I think that's when you realize, like, people who are at the top of the game, not only do they work hard, but they're gifted with that innate ability and that talent. I know I sound like a complete loser sometimes when I think about this sort of stuff. Defeatist. You know, maybe it's at night and I feel like I've had a long day, but that's what's coming up, right?
And whereas I'm just, like, totally optimistic, like, yeah, no, that's cool, man. Nah, just get your reps in, man. It's cool. Yeah. We can all be surgeons.
I've gotten my reps in a lot of things, you know? And I think I'm at the point where I'm like, maybe you can't be doing empty reps forever. You got to do the reps where it counts, where your talent is.
Are you talking about, like, what field?
What field, yeah.
For sure. Well, also, it just comes with the love, right?
Yeah, comes with the love. Like, I love podcasting. I love sitting here and talking, shooting the shit. I could do this every single night, you know? And, you know, at the end of the day, if I get good at it, that's not even a concern of mine right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I was singing, that was a concern every single night that I went up on stage. I was like, am I getting better? Is my vocal cords doing what it wants, doing what I want it to do? Am I developing my own sense of style? And it was hard.
So it just stopped being fun?
It stopped being fun when I realized that I couldn't do what I was seeing regular singers in my school do. And I wasn't comparing to myself. I was just like, wait a minute, those guys read the sheet music like 5-6 times and they're ready to rock. They're ready to go.
Yeah. There are people who are really good at making it look easy too. And, you know, they don't really flaunt or make it obvious like how hard they actually work. Yeah. I think everybody's working really hard.
Yeah. But see, that's why I can recognize talent when it's up, when it's in front of me. I could see it. I'm like, shit, there's an ease here.
Yeah.
In the arts. Like, that's how I feel. I feel sometimes that people who are man, this is very different. This is not the typical podcast that I normally do. It's crazy.
Vietnamese podcast after dark, baby.
It's crazy, man. It's like I'm actually talking a lot. I normally don't. I don't have to.
It's because we got this nice glow, this nice full moon-esque glow.
Yeah. And we got a lot to talk about, and we're just shooting the shit. We have a lot to talk about with the work that you've been doing in the comedy space in the Vietnamese community.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just about done with it.
You're just about done with it?
Well, speaking of, like, just what I was alluding to when you said, like, singing, well, when I was asking if singing stopped being fun, I feel like there are some aspects of stand-up comedy that don't seem as fun as they were maybe, like, 2 years ago for me. And I don't know if this is even good podcast material, but just to share with you as a friend.
No, I don't cut, so you're...
Okay, well, great.
You better think about what you're saying next.
Buy tickets to my show, but I might not be too into it. No, just kidding.
Your show is the show that you're producing.
Right. That's what I mean. As a performer, I think my interest in that is kind of waning a little bit.
Got it.
Now it's really like I love Embarrassed by Night. I love what we do. I love putting a lot of work into it. Doing things like as a performer myself and doing the things that I know takes to be a top level stand up just on your own to have people want you to be booked and stuff, making reels and going and showing up and making all these friends with the right people is just it seems like a lot more work than it's
yeah
than enjoyment to me. And obviously there are people who love it, and I'm good for them, and I don't even want to compete with them because they're doing it for, you know, the reasons that they they want to find success. But it's good to know. It's good to know at this point in my career, like, what I want to to really dig my heels into.
And a lot of producers and directors and writers come from the performance side.
Yeah,
it's a natural evolution.
I think about Judd Apatow.
Yeah,
how he was a blessed. He was a good stand-up, and he was like among the best. He was doing like what To Catch a Rising Star on HBO. That was like one of the big pathways for young comedians.
It's crazy. I don't even think of Judd Apatow. I remember now. I don't even think of him like that. I think of him as a producer-director guy.
Well, he's written that like he quit stand-up because he felt in his heart that he didn't have too much to say. And I truly believe that to be a good stand-up, you have to have a good, or at least be really good at convincing people that you have something to say that is worth saying, like a good point of view. And I feel that. I feel that. Like, when I'm trying to come up with material that's, like, outside of Embarrassed by Night or outside of even, like, what my interests are, like, as a Vietnamese American now, they don't seem very... I don't feel inspired by anything that I come up with these days.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
I was just talking to a DP who I've known for a long time, 20-something years now, and we're talking about the same thing. It's like, in order to have something to say, you have to have like an oyster sand rubbing so you can come up with the pearls inside of it. But if there's nothing rubbing, then you have nothing to say. And the only time shit's rubbing is if it's bothering you. And the shit that's bothering me and the affliction that I have in the Vietnamese world, is what causes the podcast. It's this drive to be like, I want to be on the map. I want my community to be on the map. I want all of our people to be on the map. I don't want to be on the map. Like me, Kenneth Nguyen, I don't need to be on the map. But I have a desperate need.
It's for the culture.
For the culture. For the people with my last name or Tran or Fan or Pham or Bui or Lay. I need that to be like front and center of international kind of spotlight. I just have that need.
I've never heard that metaphor before. The sand. I like that. I like that a lot. It makes perfect sense to me.
So if you don't have that rub inside, then there's no point of view. There's no...
Yeah, I mean, you can still make shit.
Yeah, but you can still make shit, but you're a craftsman. You know? But you're not an auteur. You're not an artist, right?
I think going back to just talking about stand-up, like, I do notice that, like, a lot of my favorite stand-ups that, like, when I was in college, like, listening to certain... Says they were like really edgy and political and alternative, and they were like coming up with really cool ways of getting their point across. And then like I revisit them years later when they're like dads, and they're just making jokes about, you know, their kids and like their kids that they obviously love. That edge feels like it's gone. It's like, what happened to David Cross? God damn. But that's why the sand thing is really good.
Like Chappelle. Chappelle really wants to...
The fuck does he have anything to complain about now?
I mean, I think he does. The transgender thing, I think it bothers him. Okay. Wokeness bothers him. I think all the things that...
But he does spend like 60% of his stand-up. new material just kind of bragging about how dope he is.
Does he?
Yeah, oh, it feels like 60%.
I haven't checked in.
Like, there's a lot of clapping and say, like, yeah, self-congratulation.
Dave Chappelle.
That's been a pretty big, among my friends, critique. Whenever we talk about, yeah, the big criticism of Dave Chappelle's new shit. Well, also, then it doesn't help that people are just irked by his digging his heels into the
transgender thing. Yeah, he's digging it in. Wonder why. What, like, what's that rub? You know? Why?
Maybe he's run out of shit. Maybe he's run out of shit that bothers him, because he's like...
Or maybe he's into transgendered men who become women.
Maybe he...
And he's dealing with that. He's grappling with that. I mean, you know, Eddie Murphy, one of Eddie Murphy's fall from grace was picking up a transvestite back in the day. Do you know about that?
I remember that piece of pop culture history.
Yeah, yeah. So these guys, like Dave Chappelle, his inability to deal with it on a level where he's not, like, really thinking about it. Maybe that's his rub.
Hmm. Who is to say? Until I meet him and then I can ask him.
And even then, he might not be fully aware of it. Right? Because it only comes out, like, in ways that... It only comes out when it's being pressured to come out. And it only manifests itself in its weird way. Which is, like, Chappelle has done through comedy.
Hmm.
Right? And if you look at Apatow, I think a lot of his shit was like, it's like rite of passage, right? Like that awkward time of growing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
What's Apatow been up to these days? I think, see, I'm a big fan of Judd Apatow, like mid-2000s, and like what he did for young Jewish men, yeah, and awkward young Jewish men. And,
yeah.
Yeah. That let's get a Vietnamese guy doing that for young Vietnamese guys. I haven't seen that movie Didi yet.
Yeah, I think we should watch it.
Yeah.
Taiwanese.
I really want to see it. And it's also same era that I grew up in, yeah. Same Bay Area scene.
We should go watch it after this.
Dude, I'm down. Is it over,
yeah,
over here?
It's playing around here.
I locally. Thought about watching it right before I came over here. Damn.
Yeah, we should. We should probably, yeah.
I'm down. I really do want to see Didi. But yeah, I would love to see somebody who's like taking hold of like this underrepresented Vietnamese community and like exploring that. I mean, we are starting to do that. We are.
I mean, I'm doing it in a different way. You're doing it in a different way. You're doing it through your comedy shows, producing them. You're like Apatow, but for the stand-up world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it through podcasting. But you're right. There's nobody doing
it at
the
international level.
Mm-hmm. But why?
Because there's no market for it yet. Sorry, Didi will start. Maybe the success of Didi might be like, oh yeah, these are cool stories. You know, we had to have Crazy Rich Asians fucking burst the floodgates, yeah, before, yeah, we started to get these like other little shows and movies.
Yeah, I wonder if it's an exercise in futility sometimes about representation. I talk about this. There might be 5 or 6% Asian American in the United States, right?
Mm.
It's even tinier in France, right? The French Asian population, look at the United States Asian Americans, and they're just like, holy shit, these guys are on fire. They're doing so much.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When the French Asians, Asian French, French Asians, when they, the Cambodians and the Southeast Asians, Koreans or Chinese Vietnamese,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
when they're looking at the United States, they're like, oh shit, they're like, they've accomplished so much shit. But we're in the heart of it here, and we're just like, the needle is not moving fast enough, right?
Do you feel like it's a wave though? I feel like we're in a wave,
but for me, it's got to be harder. It's got to be like harder hitting. It's got to be bigger.
I think, okay, we talked about this last time, but the Latin wave, let's compare ourselves to the Latin wave of like the early 2000s, right? With like Christina Aguilera.
J-Lo. And
J-Lo. Then we had Rick, who's the she-bang?
Ricky Martin. Enrique.
Yeah.
Pitbull.
It was, yeah, huge. Huge. And even getting to the level where like now we have like Shakira and J-Lo playing the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah.
So I think K-pop obviously
is gonna dominate.
Starting it. Yeah. Yeah. So it starts with music, just really good palatable music for the masses.
K-pop is on Kiss FM here in Korean. Like, they play Korean tracks on air here.
All right.
In the big market, LA.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It's crazy. It's wonderful to hear it on terrestrial radio here.
But I'm glad that, like, because K-pop is succeeding, that people will see, like, oh, other Asians. You know, it won't be like, oh, just Koreans.
Yeah.
Because we look like them, ish.
I mean, it's the name of the game, though. You know?
I'll ride that coattail. I'm not
too
to ride a coattail.
I'll ride it. Well, I'll ride it.
Yep. Filmmaking, though, I still feel like with Vietnamese filmmaking is way too expensive, and it's so elitist that, like, you know, you can be, I mean, you can't be somebody who's poor with no connections.
There's no way.
And go make even as dank of an idea that you have.
You can't.
You have to work like 50 times harder than, you know, a rich kid who gets. But
it's not an equal playing field.
And to get and then even once you, like, get funny and you start to, like, start moving, like, getting a team together, it's also even so hard to, like, get the story done and get it to a point where you're there. So I feel like, you know, there's still a real void there of, like, successful. Because you were asking why, right? Because it's fucking hard, man.
It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, Judd Apatow obviously had the right ins and outs. Not to say that he didn't earn it, but, I mean, he had been
in Hollywood
for a long time. Yeah.
But the Jewish community runs the entertainment industry.
Well, they do a really good job of helping each other.
Right. Right. They're really good at it. Mm-hmm. But there's history behind why they're good at it too, right? They're abstract thinkers. They come from a whole group, a history of, you know, I'll talk about this all the time, privately and publicly. Like, because I was told by my good Jewish friends, 5,000 years of rabbinical tradition. You're breeding rabbis. What do rabbis do? They tell stories. Mm. What do? They tell abstract stories. What do? They coalesce around a moral of a story. What do you think film is? What do you think music is? It's bringing your, like, senses, whether you're looking at it or you're hearing things through storytelling, through some sort of medium. Mm-hmm. So you can have, like, this experience of cathartic after you experience an hour and a half of a movie or a 3-minute song. It's, you know, it's part of the way that this was all kind of, like, done for 5,000 years, right?
Well, now you got me thinking, because, like, Vietnamese people have been around for a long time, but, and also correct me if I'm wrong, because I get a lot of my information from fucking
YouTube,
Reddit. So, but isn't it that, like, a lot of the Vietnamese storytelling tradition that we talk about, like, going back thousands of years, is just what we were given by the Chinese?
Yeah,
or not given,
sure.
But, like,
sure,
you know, imposed upon by the Chinese?
It's so not PC to say this, but, I mean, where is the line drawn between where we morphed into becoming Vietnamese? And where did the Chinese leave off with their, like, the further south of their people being Chinese, and then we became Vietnamese, right? Like, I explore that a lot in the work that I do. And there's no real concrete answers, man. You go to one camp, they're going to shout and they're going to yell at you for crossing the line and being, like, all, like, you know, pro-Chinese. But you go to another camp and they're like, that's ignorant, Ken. You could just see clearly our language, our traditions, our customs, funeral, weddings. You know, all of it comes from those guys, you know? And so the lines are blurred. And it's almost like American and British, right? We have a point and a line in the sand. 1776, mm-hmm. July 4th, we were cut off from the motherland, from Britain, right? But there's none of that, like, exact date In the Vietnamese Chinese history.
Yeah, it's, and, like, it's still ongoing.
It's still, yeah.
It's wild.
So the tradition of storytelling, or our own Vietnamese storytelling, I think it's relatively new. And you can argue that the diaspora in the last 50 years is like the furthermost satellite that's doing that job of, but then not enough of us are in the business of storytelling, and not enough of us are out here talking about abstract, how abstract ideas in story mm-hmm. is shaping our culture, the Vietnamese Americans or the Vietnamese diaspora. Yeah, there's a lot of us doing it, but it's not enough people doing it.
I like the idea of starting now. I actually like the idea of 1975 being a delineator. Well, because, all right, I've had this conversation, but in, like, way more sloppy ways. I've never really, like, delved deep into this. But, like, recently, with when I started really focusing on my energy on Embarrassed by Night, when I really started focusing my energy on the empathizer, I made a decision that, like, all right, what I'm going to really dedicate myself to is Vietnamese American stories. Like, I'm not qualified to tell a Vietnamese story yet. Maybe I will in the future, but right now, like, with my means right now and with my level of experience,
yeah,
I am qualified to do a Vietnamese American, I'm qualified to make a Vietnamese American art as an expert.
100%, because that's you.
Yeah. And when I made that decision, it kind of simplified a lot of, like, the other choices that I was supposed to,
it
like,
liberated
that
you.
I need to make in, yeah. I would say liberate, but also just made everything look so much simpler. I think, like, I didn't have to feel like I was trying to reach for something. Like, I'm going to tell what I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is really exciting that, like, Vietnamese American shit, that's, like, so new, and that's exciting that we get to, you know, kind of mold that for better or worse.
I love that
worse.
You brought that up tonight. I do. I've been struggling with that, and now that you're saying it, it's making it more concrete. Trying to be somebody we're not, right? Because we're seeing, like, what they're doing in Vietnam, or what they did pre-75, you know, all these things that look cool and mm-hmm. were cool are in fact super cool, but that's not our history.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we want to talk more about, like, the expansion of what it means to be Vietnamese American, but sometimes we feel like we are being trapped by generational guilt or histories of another, of the homeland that has nothing to do with us. And I'm being, like, confined to that space, but with what you're saying tonight, it's just like, fuck it, like, just own the Vietnamese American space, and that's all we really have.
Yeah, that's what I can trust myself to to do,
because then as a Vietnamese American you actually could say and do whatever you want, right? There's that liberty of you can say anything you want. I mean, this is America, the land of the free. You happen to be of Vietnamese origin.
Yeah, it's true. I would say that there are a lot of people who are Vietnamese American, especially of my generation, who would disagree, because if you just say whatever you want, what if you run the risk of offending
the
previous generation?
But then
I don't have that problem. I don't fucking care. But
yeah, but I have that problem.
I know a lot of people.
I have that problem. Have that problem. I have that issue. I care. I don't want to offend my mom's generation. I don't even want to offend the guys who are 10 years older than me that live in Orange County or live in Louisiana or San Jose. I don't want to offend these people. I love these people. Mm-hmm. I understand what they go through.
But then that is limiting.
That's limiting.
You're on a
leash.
I'm
not liberated. Am I really an American then? I'm like, that whole American side of me is like put on hold because I can't just be me.
Yeah, I had to. So that's another choice I had to make, because you've seen, like, earlier cuts of my film. Like, I have some segments where I say some things that might upset people, and I've shown it even to my family. My family's like, "Are you sure you want to keep that in there?"
Yeah,
I'm like, "No, this is art. This isn't journalism. This isn't, you know, this is how I feel, or how, you know, this is the point that I'm trying to make, and I'm just gonna keep it there. Because how are we just gonna keep stepping on eggshells, like, forever, just so that we can play both sides, but you know what I mean. You know, appease everyone. It's kind of fun to think about.
It's fun until it becomes physically unsafe.
Until someone firebombs my house.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Where are we, in the 80s?
Yeah, man. I mean, let's be honest with you. With each other. I think that for me, like, it's all good until there's pitchforks showing up in the front yard, right? That's when it becomes dangerous. But if that wasn't like a threat, like a real threat, it's just really crazy people we're dealing with, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like really fucking with crazy people. Like, I don't mean I don't mean the normal people who have real baggage of pain and trauma. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the fringe 20, 30 people who are like existing in these communities, whether they're Vietnamese or they're Palestinian or they're Israeli or they're evangelical Christians. That, like, that small tiny fraction is the danger that you have to exist, that you have to live with. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't mean to be like, no, I'm not Eric Cartman over here. Yeah. Like, I'm just do whatever. Fuck you. Like, no, but I just feel like, I mean, this is what I want to do when I talk about certain things in the Vietnamese American space, that I just don't want to be motivated by a desire to make everybody feel good about what.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of it comes from my stand-up background, yeah. I think. Like, I just learned early, like, you just trust what is funny. Not everybody's going to laugh at your shit. Just like not everybody's going to like what you have to say. But just having, but the, when, if you believe in it, then, you know, fucking go for it. But also, like, you know, learn how to do it first. Learn how to be good at stand-up before you can just start saying whatever you want.
Yeah. Do you still feel like you have shit to say or no? Because that's what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast.
Stand-up-wise?
Yeah. Or life, in life.
For sure, yeah. I know when I feel strongly about something. I mean, you know, just like you, you're going through life, you're like looking at things like, oh, you're making all these decisions in your mind. But it's rare and it's special when I do think about something that I haven't thought about before and go like, oh yeah, that does piss me off. Or, oh yeah, that is really awesome. How come not that many people know about it? And I can recognize that a little bit better now that I've like just done more creative stuff. But to answer your question, do I feel like I don't think that I'll ever run out of shit to say.
Yeah. But do you have like shit that's like inside of you, like bursting to get out? And I'm asking that because I have the questions for myself. And so like I come from that space where it's constantly wanting to get out. Constantly like we're good enough. We're better. We're better than we look, you know, like all this shit is constantly like rubbing in that oyster capacity, right?
I don't know, but also like you're talking to me in a time when I'm like kind of at the highest point. I mean, obviously my career is just getting started. Like I haven't even debuted at Viet Film Fest October 12th yet, but so I'm still very excited about everything. So maybe, I don't know, if you talk to me in 6 months when we stop getting into festivals, then I might have a little bit more pessimistic tinge. But for now, no, I'm just like, yeah, I'm doing things correctly. That's good.
There's a lot of optimism in you. I love it.
Thanks, man. It's because we're doing a podcast after dark. In the morning, I'd still just be like, huh, what? You don't see Dee Dee after this?
So tell me, what does it take to put this show together, The Embarrassment Night, September 13th, right?
Yeah. Good memory. We're doing our 10th show, Embarrassed by Night. We started our first show that 2022. And then this is our first time we've gone to San Francisco. We've gone to Sacramento, San Jose twice. We've gotten some press. We've made some waves. And now we're coming back to L.A. to just bring it with all the L.A. homies who've been with us since day one, day two. At the Cat's Crawl in East Hollywood, 120-seater, feeling pretty optimistic about that. We're still just doing about those large of shows until we can, you know, really start rolling out. We want to go to, like, Texas. We want to go to Seattle. But it is just a slow, it's also a ton of work. The question was,
Yeah.
what kind of work goes into it?
Yeah. How does it put together?
It's a two-man operation.
Yeah.
We're doing all of the reaching out to potential sponsors. We were just at the venue 2 nights ago, looking at like the dimensions and trying to get like pictures for DJ Demon Slayer to like know where he can set up
DJ booth.
the booth. Yeah, we're doing all of that, like printing out. I have a backpack full of flyers I still need to like put up. Maybe I'll just put them around AMC actually. But where, yeah, it's a lot of work, which is why we're expanding steadily but slowly.
Yeah, smart.
Because we got, yeah, we still like would be a little bit trepidatious about like if somebody came up to us was like, you want to do a 400 seat theater? We'd be like, I don't know if we can do a 400 seat theater.
But you know, eventually, 400 to me seems small, right? For me, I'm like, there's hundreds of thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Vietnamese people living in Orange County. And there's shows that they do for 1,000 people all the time, right?
That is true.
What,
However, oh, sorry, go.
yeah, what needs to happen to bring those kind of numbers? And they're like fairly normal numbers to me.
That you're talking about music or like cultural celebration shows that are like completely familiar and non-offensive. Not saying that our show is offensive
Yeah.
or anything, but it's not something that people would look at and be like, I don't know what this is.
Mainstream.
Yeah, it's mainstream. Oh, it's a Paris by Night. This is what it is. Oh, we're gonna go listen to some music. Oh, it's gonna be good. It's always gonna be good. You know, there's gonna be dancing, there's gonna be
Yeah.
singing, there's gonna be thechumtho or cakes and shit like that. This is just such an odd thing still. Like whenever I go to like Chinatown,
Yeah.
I go to my favorite pho restaurants around there. I'd be like, hey D, can you put this up in your window? She's like, oh yeah, what is this? I'm like, oh, it's a Jungjin hi. She's like, oh hi, huh? Like hack, huh? I'm like, no, it's like
Stand-up
stand-up
comedy.
comedy. And she's like, oh, okay, well, cool. I have that conversation with the same people every time, and they're very sweet about it. But
Yeah.
yeah, they don't know what the fuck that is.
And that's my point. It's like to see it one day where people understand it. Because there's a lot more Vietnamese American English speaking people than there were 20 years ago that were going to the Paris by Night shows. That demographic has flipped, right? But I wonder how many of them can actually like identify with the comedy of a Embarrassed by Night show.
Yeah, we're slowly getting there. We'll maybe get like, you know, two or three new followers every day, which
Yeah.
is great. So that means like, oh, there's some people who really get it, who are like, ooh, this is, what is this? This is sick. But there's still like, I still don't know if I would be able to go pass out flyers at night market in Little
Yeah.
Saigon and have people even be interested in whatever this is. And also, we're still running the risk of, I messaged you about this the day that happened, but we still are, just have to face it, like in a situation where we're so underrepresented,
Up underrepresented.
thank you, that people think that we have a obligation to present our culture as good and model minority. We had somebody come to our show, great, had a great time, had maybe some of the comics spoke to him. They were doing some crowd work. I don't remember exactly what went down, but he had a bad time. It didn't turn into anything big or anything, but he had a uncomfortable enough time that he messaged us the next day and said, hey, I went to your show last night, and just know that, you know, essentially, he was saying that when we curse and say offensive things, it will turn people away from our show. So, ostensibly, down deep inside, he was saying that a Vietnamese show should be
Like
prim and proper.
shining,
We have
like
that
really bright.
obligation. Yeah,
And I
which,
know, and this is what I'm going to say to that. Fuck that.
yeah, you didn't say that when I messaged you, though.
I didn't.
No, you had a very, very wise,
Political.
yeah, you were like, you don't know, like, don't do your knee-jerk reaction to him. You never know who this guy's connected with. I was like, yeah, that's a good point. So I waited on it a little
Yeah,
bit,
I
but.
think maybe contextually in the text message you sent me, I remember now, or recall that the way it was presented was don't fuck with people like who are showing up to your show. But I am saying it as a sort of when we're thinking about Viten Nguyen's idea of the plenitude of storytelling, that white people can make shitty shows. They can make really brilliant shit. They can make mediocre shit and they can make shitty shit. But they're allowed to make everything. Jeff, what is it? Jeff Foxworthy, the comedian, the redneck comedian, he's allowed to do his shit. Trailer trash. If you talk about it like Johnny Cash, you can argue that, prison guy, fucking prison culture of that era. They're allowed to fucking talk about that shit.
But when we do our shit, it
But
has to
when we
be
do our shit, it
excellent
has to be
or
excellent. Why?
canceled.
You can't fuck that.
Because there aren't enough yet. And then it goes back to, just like access, how hard it is to be a filmmaker, so that we can't have that many filmmakers yet. But I'm saying we're getting there. We're slowly getting
Yeah.
there. We just
And then
gotta.
people say, you shouldn't curse on your show. Well, it depends who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to you, I'm going to curse. If I'm talking to somebody who's prim and proper, I've had priests and nuns on the show. I'm not going to curse with those people. It's who I'm talking to, whoever I feel comfortable cursing. And I tell my 5 and 7 year old kids around me, feel free to curse.
Yeah, it's good to know
Yeah.
you
Just
be
get to
aware
know
of
aware of
your
your surroundings, right?
right.
And whoever doesn't want to hear this, then they can turn it off for this episode.
We actually were, yeah, like an Embarrassed by Night show. I had this conversation with somebody from a college, a local college this morning who was thinking about bringing us on to do shows for their students. And we were talking about like how, in the past he's had some students come up and complain about some of the material that was going on about the as university students do these days. And yeah, that's obviously we would be cognizant of that. We're not going to do a balls to the wall Embarrassed by Night show at,
College campus,
some
yeah.
college campus and like be doing drag and all that goofy shit. No, we know our audience. However, when we're doing a Embarrassed by Night show at a nightclub, and we have a 18 and over only or 21 and over only disclaimer on the flyer, that guy was wrong. But anyways, yeah, I'm glad that we had that conversation though, just to be like.
Yeah, and I think the whole point of being an American is to be able to do whatever, say whatever you want.
Yep.
Right? I think that's the only thing about that. It's the one thing about being an American is like everybody has a right to say whatever the fuck they want, right? And wherever it lands, you have as an artist, you have to deal with the consequences. If you're shunned from this part of the world, you have to accept that. If you're shunned on this part, you have to accept it. Just kind of have to play your cards the way you want, right?
Yeah, not everybody can be Tom Hanks or universally beloved the way.
The Rock is.
Yeah, The Rock just so inoffensive that they don't even that he I don't even I can't even remember the last time he's had like a wife on a movie of his or like a girlfriend. Like he's just this
The
golem
Rock,
figure.
yeah.
But yeah, I don't think, and that's going back to like how I made that decision. Like I'm right now at this point, I'm doing Vietnamese American shit, and that's who I am.
Unapologetically.
Yeah, like my film won't be able to be shown in Vietnam. That's a crazy thought, but I
What if you're
accept that.
limited? What if you're limited to going back?
I think we're small enough potatoes that won't ever happen. I also don't think that the content of my film is that offensive, but you know how they be about just speaking up against the war and saying that it was maybe a good thing or maybe a bad thing. It's a bummer. Actually, I had a there's a rock group that I was friends with in Hanoi, and I had wrote them a very nice and pitched them this to use their song in a segment of our film. And they're Hanoians, right? And I was like, this is an American film. It won't be shown in Vietnam. We won't, you know, but I love this about your song. I love how it swells up in the music and this lyric plays during this part, like very detailed. And they're like, you know what? It's
too risky.
It's too risky. Like, as a Vietnamese, like, artist, we're seeing our other fellow artists be attacked for things that they don't even believe, but just because they're participating in or even just, like, next to. It's wild to think, like, how tough it is for, like...
But that goes on in middle America here, right? Like, that's just mob mentality wherever you go. It's not just Vietnamese and it's not just white. It's just human to kind of, like, have certain nationalistic sort of leanings, you know, and not think it through, right? And not really kind of figure out the nuances of what the hell is going on. Most people are like that. Most people are like, fuck that, fuck that, fuck the Dems, fuck the Republicans, fuck that, you know? It's just the way human nature is, you know? Oh, look at that rock band, fuck them. They, like, put their song in this American film. It's just so binary sometimes.
Yeah, I shouldn't be, like, telling them what to do with their music, obviously, or, like, you know, complaining about that they didn't. But I just thought it was wild. Like, it didn't... As I'm so privileged, like, as a as an American, that I'm just like, oh, fuck them. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Somebody's going to bug me on Twitter?
Yeah.
I don't even have Twitter. Yeah. But, yeah, that was a bummer. I don't know. Just constantly learning about how
things are perceived.
Works. Yeah. With doing this film. So it's cool.
Yeah. And the more we bump into opposition, the more that rub happens. Right? The more the rub happens, the more material comes out of our lives. So I think sometimes it's a decision, right? It's a conscious decision to go and get more of the rub, get more of the sand in you, or choose to sit out and be like, I don't want to deal with it.
Well, let's go back to that metaphor, though, because I still like it a lot. But a pearl is made because
a lot of sand's rubbing.
The clam is uncomfortable, and it coats the piece of sand so that it is comfortable. Right?
So that it is comfortable?
Yeah, that's why
it
has to make a pearl. That's why some people say that pearl farming is unethical, because you're making a clam feel
work.
Yeah, you're making a clam work.
Never heard of that. That's funny.
But so that means then, if we're using that metaphor, then that means that it has no choice but to cover that grain of sand with that coating.
Okay.
Or else it'll be uncomfortable for the rest of its life and, you know, probably just have...
But that's an existential question then for the clam, right? Then why would the clam, that particular breed of pearl-making clams exist? Or oysters? Why does that one exist? That one exists... Its whole reason of being alive is to create these objects of beauty. Quentin Tarantino, Judd Apatow... You know, arguably, they're a little crazy in the head because they just are talented. Fucking, maybe we should put them to death because they're telling the truth about all these weird coming of age. Tarantino was talking about slavery and, you know, white America. Maybe we should not let those guys talk. But the reason those guys are alive and in the media is because they're talking about uncomfortable things. Jordan Peele, another guy that's talking about very socially uncomfortable things between black people and white people in America. But that's his whole reason of existing. So I think pearls and oysters, man, if we think it's unethical, then might as well just collapse the whole world.
Well, I would argue those three guys make very entertaining movies that make hella money, though. So it's not like they're just coming out and complaining like crazy people at a bus stop or something. They do have that grain of sand in there that's making them uncomfortable, but they are coating it and turning it into a pearl to share with America, the movie going public.
Yeah. But they're distressed inside. I think all of everybody who's creating and acting and writing and directing and singing, everybody, I think artists are just...
Well, you hope, because then it just comes out phony.
I just don't think you can exist without having it. You got to be like some borderline, some type of crazy that you're dealing with these issues constantly and you can't get away from it.
You know, I don't feel like, and this might be why, like, I feel like stand-up has not come as naturally to me in these later years as opposed to, like, you know, 2022, Treefort. But it's because I'm not too bothered by shit, maybe because I'm distracted these days.
No, man. I think, like I told you at the beginning of this podcast, I'm talking to that DP, my friend of 20-something years. He said the same thing. He said, I'm just not triggered by a whole lot of things anymore. I'm happy with my kids. I'm happy with the money that I make. He's basically saying I don't have a point of view right now. I don't know. He didn't say that directly. I might be extrapolating.
That's fair. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. But that's what I read from my boy, from my, you know, one of my good friends. I was just like, and he's not Asian. He's a white guy. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, because he's so comfortable. Life has treated him well. He's got a house, got two beautiful kids, got money coming in. Wife makes a lot of money. He's living a great life.
That's awesome.
But there's no more edge. There's no more point of view. There's no more drive to create.
Yeah, but do you think that do you think that the world needs more tortured artists?
Yeah, I do. I
really?
Do. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. It's a fair question. Do I think that the world needs more artists and tortured artists? Yes. Because without artists, I think we in society will get a free pass. It's the artists that make us see the uncomfortable things. Like Viet Thanh Nguyen. He makes us see very uncomfortable things about Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. Palestinian people. James Baldwin. Right?
Right.
You get all of these like major artists who make us feel uncomfortable. And because we see uncomfortable, society shifts.
That's for sure. Like I appreciate a good artist, but my question was, do we need more of them?
Yeah, we do. We can never have too many of them.
Because I feel like we have enough. We have a good amount. But then again, I'm speaking as somebody who's still fucking fundraising. And
yeah, exactly.
Seeing just how difficult it is, now I'm seeing, I'm attending things there's, 80% artists. I'm like, oh, wow, there's too many of us. That's when I...
Really? You feel there's too many artists?
I'm saying that's just bias from me, because the times that I do, leave the house, it's usually to do some kind of fundraising event or do something that's arts-related.
Yeah.
So I'll be in a room that's, 80% artists.
Right, but there's Vietnamese people in the world, Vietnamese-American businessmen and women that never see artists, that they're like, where are the artists? I'm in rooms where it's all business people, it's all executives. And they're like, oh my God, it's so wonderful to meet somebody from the entertainment world.
What the hell?
Yeah. Imagine.
Jeez. I gotta go there.
Are rooms of these people, of Vietnamese-American doctors, Vietnamese-American lawyers, Vietnamese-American executives that don't spend an iota of time around Vietnamese-American creatives. It's very polarized, right. Yeah. It's true.
No, I totally believe you. It's just I just haven't thought about that for a while, just because I've had my head stuck so far up my own ass lately.
And I'm in these rooms, and I'm just like, my gripe is, why can't we find a way to combine everybody and be mixing in these rooms constantly? You know, have the big directors, film directors, singers, and be in the rooms with all these big... hedge fund guys and business guys and academics, you know?
Yeah, there was... Okay, so we were both at this one event that Dan Nguyen put on.
Yeah.
In L.A. And I thought it was a dope event. I was happy to see everybody there.
Viet New Wave at the Noi House. That's what it was. About 4 Sundays ago. Yeah, about a month ago.
Yeah, it was awesome. I thought it was very cool.
July 28th.
But I didn't feel like there was like any reason for it to be there besides it just being a dope. This isn't a criticism, but this it felt like
A big networking event?
just a big part, like
Party.
pep rally is the word that I would use,
Pep rally, okay.
because you guys were all on a panel and you guys were all like different, had were working on different things, but the conversation of the people on the panel was just more like, yeah, I feel like Vietnamese people are doing more things. Yeah, I feel like Vietnamese people are doing more things. And it felt like that on a small level of what you're talking about, of just like a big Vietnamese gathering, but it felt pointless. And again, this isn't because I enjoyed it thoroughly and I had a lot of
Yeah, it's
fun.
not a criticism. Okay,
But
well, let me ask you something. If you were doing that very, this is a great conversation, by the way. If you threw that event, how would you intentionalize it?
Probably focus on one certain topic to have, whether it be, if it was a political thing, I wouldn't do this, but talk about the Israel-Palestine situation.
So you'd focus it.
Yeah, focus it a little bit more. Or, if somebody was working on a project, talk about the project. Or if everybody's working on the same project, but there's some certain through line, do that. But yeah, I felt like if it was focused like that, the panel aspect could have held attention a little bit more. But for what it was, just like a vibe, solid vibe.
Yeah, solid vibe.
And
Interesting.
we should keep doing things like that. If we know that that's just like, all right, we're just gonna go vibe out and high five each other and say what's up to all the people that we haven't seen in a while, and then just eat some bensail. That's I like that. I like that idea a lot. It's a celebration.
But let's intentionalize our gatherings.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind going to one that was just straight up like,
Yeah, we're here for a cause.
Or a cause, or at least just like talk about
Yeah, I
something.
love it. I love the fact that you have this opinion about that event. 'Cause yeah, I left it feeling the same way you did. Oh, what a great vibe. This was awesome. A lot of beautiful people, a lot of alcohol. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. But you have a point. But again, for me, it goes back to Viet Thanh Nguyen's story about plenitude thing. Why can't we just have a bunch of parties and it being, one for an intention, another for raising funds, another for a political campaign,
I think we're
and
working
one
on
for
it.
nothing, which is what you're talking about, Noi House.
Yeah, the Vietnam entertainment
That's it.
meetups, those are great. I think we're working on it. I was talking to the Viet Creatives Collective. They just did one, and I went to it just to support. I didn't give a shit about what the topic was, but I just went to just to like, support and just be another body. And I thought they did a great job. They specifically said that this needs to have intent. They made it a music, they made it a panel about musicians who are indie musicians. They're Vietnamese in LA and working on the creative spaces. And they had like really great specific questions to ask each other. They were talking about like musician burnout. They were talking about how to navigate the industry as an independent. They were talking about,
Gatekeepers.
independent, like really useful stuff. So you have a lot of people who are like, yeah,
Up and coming,
I'm coming. I'm trying to
artists. And
rap. I'm trying to do this, and that was great. So, I think that we're getting there.
And then there's another one happening this Saturday. Vitam, which is another crew that this is their second year that they're putting together at our dear friend Dr. Bao's house in Hermosa. And it's a very public event. They're f raising funds for their organization, another cultural awareness organization.
What does the organization do?
So they put on cultural events, and I think this has a few artists that are performing.
I saw that, yeah. It looks like a dope concert.
So it's done by a great group of people that I respect and admire. Let's see how it turns out. It's going to be a fun, any gathering at Dr. Bao's house in Hermosa is going to be a fun thing.
That's great. I should not pretend like I'm not totally a part of it.
Oh, okay. Tell yeah, me what you're doing.
No, they're letting me. But that was a sincere question of like, what are they about? Yeah, yeah. Because I tried to like look at their website and it wasn't quite clear. I know that they have dialogues, but I didn't know like beyond that what it was.
Yeah. Man, I'm getting to know you a lot more now. You're really big on like making your intent very clear.
Yeah, that's why I was like, we should do another podcast, because 2 years ago, the first time I came on here, it was like before I even went to shoot my doc.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really influenced like my relationship with my identity deeply. And also since then, you know, we've just like become better friends and gotten more involved with the Vietnamese community and watch it grow.
And that's why I love the podcast, because I get to watch you and you get to watch me grow, and people get to witness this for the next 10 years. And you see all these other podcasts where they bring like relatively unknown people onto the show, and you keep showing up, and all of a sudden you start to be doing bigger things in the world. And I get to share this with everybody who's listened to the podcast. I wouldn't have you on if you weren't like out there hustling and doing some shit. Right. Yeah, it's just the way it goes, right?
Right.
Because otherwise we wouldn't have shit to talk about. You're here because there's growth. 2 years ago, you were a comedian organizing and producing shows. And today, you're like a filmmaker. You're phasing out your stand-up life. And you're getting more into the producing of these big comedy shows. And who knows? You'll be probably directing a comedy in a year or two from now, like Judd Apatow.
Yeah, we were shouting out Judd Apatow a lot today, so who knows. But anyway, sorry, what were we talking? Oh, yeah, Vietnam invited me to show some of my film, and I thought it was a great fit, despite me not knowing too much about what they do. But I did see on their website they like to promote conversations between generations, which I think is very important. That's like a huge theme of my film. So I was like, okay, I think this will, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, as far as I know, I don't know too much about them, so I'm excited to learn.
All you need to know is Queen O is behind it.
And Queen O is behind it. Yeah, she's the one who brought me on.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Queen O is a powerhouse. She's done a lot. She's an actress. She's a voiceover person. She's doing a lot of good things.
And she's from San Jose, so.
Yeah, yeah. She's a bright woman. I respect her a lot, and that's all you need to know. That's all the public needs to know, is that Queen O is behind it, you know. I don't know all the other partners that she works with. I don't know them well. I know of them, but obviously Queen O and I've known her for a while now, so and I've spent a lot of time with her, so.
Yeah, she's a homie.
Yeah, she's a homie. What else do we are we missing in our conversation? Because I know now, I know you're full of intent when you appear, and I want to make sure that we have covered everything that we set out to cover.
I was just excited to talk about the film and how it's going to be premiering at Viet Film Fest, and that's just like a whole new leg of this journey, and it's just getting started. So thanks for letting me do that.
Yeah, October 12th, right?
October 12th is our premiere at Viet Film Fest. That's our like festival premiere, but we're also doing a exclusive private event that I wanted to invite you and all your listeners to RSVP to. It's limited spaces, but that'll be on September 21st.
It's a free event, or?
It's a free event. It's at the Cat's Crawl. That's the space that we're also doing Embarrassed by Night. Should have asked them for a deal on the rental now that I think about that. But the 21st, Saturday, find out more information at empathizer.com/RSVP. If you can make it, you absolutely need to RSVP to get in. But yeah, you can check out the film for free.
It'll be fun. It's going to be fun. From now to the end of the year, there's going to be so much happening. It's going to be a good time. Yeah. I think it's a good time to be Vietnamese.
It is. Well, it only gets better every year.
Yeah, it's right? True. It's true, because the fruit is ripening. All the people who are like, who's been grinding, you know, the gears in the last 20 years have like now arriving at, you know, we have people at Marvel, we have people at DC Studios, we have people in CAA, we have people at UTA, we have people at Paradigm, we have people all over Hollywood, in music and film and TV.
I think you and a lot of your generation in LA and SoCal have like done a great job of like harboring this need to fuck with each other. You know? Like you're like, no, we gotta stick together. I remember we've had conversations in private where like you're very much pro
I
like
think we're learning from the Jewish community, Taiwanese community, Korean community. We learn, you gotta stick together, and
Yeah, there's no reason to.
there's no way to fight each other and succeed. There's no way to do that. You cannot succeed if you're fighting each other.
And then in turn, then you have like the kids who are like we go to La Quinta High School, which
Yeah.
is like what 96% Vietnamese, which
I don't
is
know. Yeah,
insane.
86, I think. Yeah.
80, something crazy like
Crazy,
that.
yeah.
We call it Vietnamese Wakanda, where
Yep.
they have teachers and they have a lion dance team where they're hopefully like people like us will be invited to go and speak and just inspire this new generation of kids to just try to pursue arts or just promotion of Vietnamese American culture because I didn't quite grow up
Yeah.
with that feeling that need to.
I think our parents were worried about surviving,
Of course, yeah.
feeding a ta feeding the family. And I think now
And so was
that,
I, just trying to survive among white people.
And now that I'm of the generation of, like, I'm old enough to be the high school kids' parents, and a lot of the parents are well-to-do because they had to pursue a stable career and they've made a lot of money. The kids don't have to worry. They can go out and pursue creative endeavors now.
Yeah, we're raising a generation
Yeah,
of film
film
students.
students and musicians and artists.
Little spoiled bitches. No, just kidding. I went to film school.
Well, thank you. Thank you
Thank you,
for coming
man.
on.
I'm glad that the fourth time was the charm for this.
It'll be the fifth and the sixth, and we have
Yeah.
another 20, 30 more years of sitting here and growing old together.
All right. Just make sure that it's after dark though, because I like
Yeah, this
Vietnamese
one's good one.
podcasts after dark.
Yeah, I like this. The Nho edition.
Hell yeah. Can't believe
Yeah.
we only did one beer.
All right, Fred. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.